Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmers.
Hello, Judy, and hello, viewers and listeners. Judy, tell folks what is our topic for today.
When do annoyances become deal breakers?
And as you'll see when we get into the topic, this is stimulated by a letter from a listener and also a mailing list subscriber, because the topic that got us into this, we did a podcast on several weeks ago, and also I did a newsletter. I wrote about it in my newsletter as well. So we will get into that in just a little bit. But first, a word from our various wonderful things that we are offering you here that we hope you will do. Let me, before we even do that, let me put in something that we neglected last week to say in our intro. I just want to mention, we haven't mentioned it for a while. Folks, please rate us and subscribe and
like
review
us
and like us and all that
and
kind of good stuff.
Follow us and tell your friends.
Because that helps more,
more
people find us, and we really appreciate that. So, let's put in a word for the book that started it all, which was...
would be Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
In which, by the way, I do have a chapter that discusses how do you know when to call it quits, which is quite related to this week's topic, and my more recent book, which is...
It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy is Wrong.
Yes, indeed. And actually, that book has some things that bear on a lot of what we're talking about today as well. So I recommend those books. And I've got a booklet out. If you subscribe to my website,
you
will
get this, the PDF for free of 7 words to jumpstart your love life.
That's it. And you can buy that book at Amazon if you want to, but as Judy just mentioned, you'll get a PDF for free just by signing up for my newsletter. Gee, Judy, how would people sign up for my newsletter?
Well, I would suggest you go to ctin7.com and you'll get a little window that pops up.
A little box,
A little box that pops up that says, sign up for Dr. Bruce Chalmers' newsletter.
That's the one. And so do that, and when you have signed up, you will get a link for that PDF. And you'll also get my newsletter, by the way, which is which is worth getting all by itself.
Yes, it is. It's very informative and full of excellent information.
And it's just once, about once a month I've been doing it now. It's not spammy, and I do not share your information with anybody at all for any reason. Please feel free to do that. And look, if you don't like my newsletter, you can always unsubscribe. And you get to keep the PDF. By golly.
There you go.
Such a deal. And
the other little booklet that you recently published, My Husband Complains About My Cleaning, What Do I Do? Hint, it's not about the cleaning.
And you know, even if you're not, even if that isn't your particular problem, you might find that book quite useful. I will tell you, if you, the things you'll find that book quite useful for are even more covered in my other two books. So I'd say go for those, but hey, whatever works for you. And now a word from our sponsor. And our sponsor is?
The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
I see we've both chosen to wear blue for this.
I think it was coincidental.
I think it was, coincidental. Well, I noticed you were putting on blue, so I couldn't do it. But I wasn't thinking about the Blue Tent, but I often do think about the Blue Tent because it's a lovely book to think about. How's that for a segue?
It is.
Yes.
It says, the Bible is filled with tales of love and lust, but most of it is implied. What do we really know about the sex lives of our ancestors? The Blue Bible takes 10 sexy spicy. The Blue Tent takes 10 sexy spicy tales based on the biblical stories and commentary and weaves them into erotic short stories you'll want to read over and over again, either by yourself or with your partners.
Partners.
That's right.
Yeah, the blue. I like the Blue Bible. That's interesting.
Yes, it is the Blue Bible.
It already is. The Bible was already blue. That's kind of the point of the Blue Tent, is to point that out. So if you like erotica, go for that book. That's our sponsor. And so, Judy, let us talk about this particular
annoyances. So let me just adjust my chair here because it tends to slip.
All of a sudden, you're going down in the quicksand there. Yes, I'm glad you're back up. Yeah. Yeah, when do annoyances become deal breakers? Now, we should probably set the stage for this. A few weeks ago, whenever you're seeing this, but a few of our episodes ago, we did one that was that I claimed modestly, of course,
Modestly.
to be the magic key that solves all relationship problems. Okay, is that ridiculous? Frankly, yes. But nevertheless, I claimed at the time and still claim there is something to it. So let me just briefly reiterate what that was. My
Okay.
magic,
For those of you who
key.
may have missed it.
That's right. And you can go back and check out that episode, of course. But the magic key that solves all relationship problems is simply to be able to the ability to be mildly annoyed. I could add moderately annoyed, mildly or moderately annoyed. And since then, it's funny in my work, with couples, it's come up. It's
So
'cause it's
you're
on my
saying
mind.
mildly, moderately annoyed as opposed to like jumping off the handle and like spazzing out over
Exactly.
somebody's annoyances?
Yes, precisely. Yeah, and what I've pointed out, and this is very relevant to the question that a person will, we're calling her Lily. We change everybody's name when they write to us, but we're calling her Lily. What Lily wrote to us, we'll read her question in a little while. But what I'm about to note is, that concept of a mild or moderate annoyance, if you think about it this way, when things are going well, when a couple is doing well with each other, what does that even mean, doing well? Well, what do you think? What does it mean?
Getting along, able to talk to each other, to tell each other things that, potentially might bother, annoy, hurt the other person,
Sure.
bring up problems that you might have.
Also
But
known as intimacy in
yes,
my
intimacy,
lexicon, right? Yeah, no,
yes,
absolutely.
right.
Yeah, and I could make that even more general, I suppose. When it's going well, you feel good to be with each other,
You enjoy each other's company and you're not afraid to bring up things that, might make you feel, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what
Well,
I'm talking
and indeed, what might you need to bring up?
about. Something that the person's doing that annoys you.
Exactly. Yes, it's as simple as that, right? And here's, and look, I
Which I brought up
assert
with you this morning.
you did. Yes, absolutely. You say, yes, I didn't see the gunk in the shower.
No, I'm not even
Oh,
talking
you're
about
not
the
even
gunk.
talking about the gunk in the
I'm
shower.
talking about talking to me from like
Oh,
upstairs.
yes, that's right. Yes,
Yes.
that's right. And I'm talking to you and you can't hear me,
I
and
can't
that's
hear you
really
if I'm in a
annoying.
different room. And you're
Absolutely.
constantly saying things to me when I'm either downstairs or in a different room. It's,
Yes.
if you want to talk to me,
That's right.
come talk to
And
me.
you said that, and you were
Yes.
willing to say it, and I heard it, So, yeah, and the point of all of that is, I claim, and I think this is just an axiom. I can't imagine this not to be true, although feel free to disagree. It is not possible for two people to have a relationship and not occasionally be annoying. I can't imagine it, and I will often say, well, you never annoy me, but God knows I annoy you, But yeah, you
I'm
annoy me
sure
too.
there are things I do that annoy
Well,
you,
and the
honey.
funny thing is, of course, that must be true. I'm claiming that's an axiom, The funny thing is, though, what I also claim is that when things are going well, the annoyances don't have any particular dominance. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, it's an annoyance. It ends up not mattering. And sometimes people will say to me, well, should I say something about being annoyed or should I hold it in and then it festers, And I'm thinking, the interesting thing when thing again, big if, when things are going well, then it almost doesn't matter if you say or don't say, which is to say, you can say if you feel like saying and it goes well. Or you can just say, oh, to hell with it, I don't care. And that goes well, And then if it bothers you again, then you say something. In other words, you don't have to have a rule. This is the corollary to my whole bit about it's not about communication, You don't have to have a rule for it. If it's going well, you just do what you want to do, and what you want to do is probably going to work well because it's going well. Now, the folks who consult me, for some odd reason, things are not going well. I suppose I could take that as a view on the state of relationships in general. Oh my God, if you ask me, everybody who ever makes an appointment with me is having trouble. It must be everybody's having trouble. Well, that's silly, isn't it? I have a biased sample. Why are they consulting a couples therapist? If things are going well, you don't. This is a funny thing. I will throw this in. Sometimes people will say, I've occasionally met couples where they will say, I think everybody should be in couples therapy. It's just a good thing to have, you know? And look, I'm not a couples therapist, right? I'm not going to say, oh, no, I disagree with you. But I guess I do. It's like, no, you, I mean, if you benefit from it, of course, you know, and I respect that. But everybody doesn't need couples therapy. If things are going well, what the hell do you need couples therapy for? You got enough to do, you know?
Exactly.
So I'm working with folks where they're having problems. And that's the thing. When you're having problems, and this is just so fascinating, relatively stuff that in theory that most people would say, why am I getting so upset about that? It's so small, you know? It stops being small because when things are going badly, everything is more evidence of, oh, there you go again. It's another rejection. Or there you go again, pointing out my flaws. You know, I do almost everything right. Why do you focus on the one thing I do wrong? I just had that conversation with a couple yesterday. And you know, both parties are saying it's relatively small things, but then, you know, and the person who was issuing the complaint in that conversation I had yesterday was saying, I feel like I can't say anything because as soon as I say something, you know, the other
You're gonna be
person is all
shut
upset.
down or
Yeah, yeah. And yet they're both saying these are small things. You know, you forgot to take out the garbage. I mean, they're not saying that it's, you know, nobody's alleging that the one who forgot to take out the garbage was trying to do something bad, but it was, you know, the person who said that was hoping the other person would have taken out the garbage because they said they would and they didn't. So, okay, they just said something. When things are going well, they say it or don't say it, and it's fine. When things aren't going well, it just fits the narrative that, oh my God, I'm not sure I have the right person, or oh my God, you don't like
Just
me.
one more thing,
Yeah,
just one more
exactly.
thing you do that annoys me.
Yeah. And you don't like me, or you don't love me,
Or you don't respect me,
or you're
or
out to get
you,
me, or any, exactly. Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah.
it's
So
like,
it fits into that. So my bit about saying, you know, the key is to be capable of mild annoyance really is another way of saying this really reduces it to the silly, you know. The key to doing well is to be doing well. Thanks a
Well,
lot.
thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
No kidding.
Right. It's like you didn't know that already. Yeah, but of course this flies in the face of the notion that says no, the key to doing well is to speak in certain ways or adhere to certain rules. That won't make you do well. Those will work when you're doing well, and when you're doing well, you don't need the rules.
There you
That's the
go.
problem. So now let's segue into Lily's question,
Okay.
which I will pull up on our screen for us to be able to see. So why don't you read her question?
Sure. Lily writes, in a recent fight, my husband has told me that all our problems are my parents' fault. He explains, they are emotionally difficult, chaotic, and hurtful to me, so I turn to him for comfort or healing or listening to me emote about it, and this is more than he can take. Then I'm angry that he won't offer me comfort, and within minutes it's World War III. His solution? I should get therapy to deal with them. He should not be involved whatsoever in any therapy or with them. We've been married 20 years with 2 children. To your advice in your newsletter this week that it's okay that our partners and others we love annoy us, yes, but what's beyond annoyance difference? What do we choose to be in relationship with? We're always choosing, that's part of what you're saying. But at what point, what are acceptable levels, in fact, healthy levels of annoyance, and what are destructive, poisonous
Yeah,
levels? Well, that's a
and
really good
that is a
question.
really good question, and it really, I just think it's kind of the central question in a lot of ways. I mentioned, you know, that fits in with what I've said before about how do you know when to call it quits, and so I want to, first of all, put it in the context of, you know, my clever little thing about, you know, to being able to tolerate annoyances, because indeed. I will say that my notion about tolerating annoyance or about not freaking out about annoyance doesn't preclude deciding to break up or deciding to do something much more drastic than simply tolerating it or bringing it up in conversation or whatever. It doesn't preclude that at all. I'm saying, yeah, to be annoyed or hurt by something, even at a pretty high level, I'm still saying the ability to be able to manage that without going into total freakout mode is important as a way of managing it. Where that leads to depends on the circumstance. You know, if somebody is being out and out abused by whatever definition you choose to use, and I don't mean to be simplistic about that. You know, I mean, physically abused is pretty obvious, but often people will feel emotionally abused. And if that's the situation, you still need to be able to think clearly about your options. And a lot of times what happens for folks when they're in those situations, understandably, is they're in such a panic or they aren't able to think clearly, they aren't able to perceive what their options are. And, you know, in the worst case, that means they're just stuck in an abusive cycle. In situations like Lily described, she's not describing, you know, things at that level, but she's saying what happens is within minutes it's World War III. And that's often what happens when, you know, when there's something sitting there that they as a couple haven't figured out yet how to handle as a couple in ways that works for both of them. But you know, addressing her question, it's really a very important question. What are acceptable or healthy levels of annoyance, you know? And that's
Well, it
a
sounds
great
like she's at
question.
an unhealthy level of annoyance right
Well, yeah,
now, which
sure.
is why this is coming up. So it seems like the problem here is her relationship with her parents and how she's bringing that baggage into the marriage.
Well, I would say no, that's her husband's view of the problem. Which I is, you know,
Yeah, her
there's validity
husband,
to. You know, they both have a valid view. Her problems with her husband in this. Not to you know, trivialize her problems with her parents, but you know, the complaint he's issuing, and I'm using the word complaint, I don't mean that in a whiny sense, I mean like in a medical sense, you know what I mean? What's your complaint? What's bothering you? You know, the thing that's bothering him is that he feels like he's being punished for someone else's sins. You know, I've heard this is a really common phenomenon. It's another one I just heard yesterday in a conversation where one person was saying, I'm not the one who abused you. And, you know, the other person was saying, I get triggered by these things because of what happened to me, you know, as a kid. And so that's why I immediately go into that sort of defensive mode. And the other person was saying, but I'm not the one who did that to you. I'm not doing that. And the person who was in defensive mode was saying, I know that, but that's what happens. You know, so the suggestion, of course, it's the same suggestion that Lily's husband is saying, well, then you need therapy. You should process that trauma so that you don't react that way. But of course, that doesn't address the fact that he's undoubtedly contributing to the situation as well by how he's seeing his wife. And that, again, came up in the conversation yesterday. Anyway, that's all of this stuff, you know,
Well,
this
I'm
is.
so glad that it came up in the conversation. So, what did you tell those folks?
Well, it's interesting. What I point out is to be able to hear each other without going to panic, even when they're talking about this difference, is how it get. That's the opposite of going to World War III. In other words, to be able to hear that and not know how to solve it at first. I have great faith in the ability of folks to be able to soften the categories enough so that then they can think clearly. Again, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Lily needs to put up with this, or, you know, I don't know her husband. I don't know Lily either, for that matter, as far as I know. I don't know these folks. I don't know to what extent they can do this, but just she's the one who wrote the letter. Just speaking to her, to the extent that she can get hold of herself and recognize, well, I'll tell you what I told the couple
Well,
yesterday. It was
that's
a
what I
great,
just asked you.
yes, it was. Finally came around to it, didn't I? Well, I wanted to relate it to Lily, but no, I will say
ahead.
that. So, you know, it was a woman saying this to the man. The man was the one being triggered. The woman was the one who was saying, but I'm not the one who treated you that way, you know, as a kid. And he would hear a certain tone of her voice when she was complaining about something, and he would just not going there, you know, he would just shut it down, and she would just feel completely shut down. And I said, you know, he might say something like, tell it to the complaint department, you know, as if to say, shut up, you know. And she would say, so she would end up just shut down. She would just feel completely shut down. She would sit there silent, not knowing what to do, and they would be silent
Well,
for a
I know.
day.
What do you do?
So what I said to her was, you know, it's interesting, and again, always tentative, you know, don't know if you could do this, but if you could, what you're saying is when he says that, it shuts you down. And I'm saying, I wonder if what would happen is when he says that, if it didn't shut you down, if it, you know, if you're not panicked about it, you might say something like, wow, I see that really got to you. I still want to talk about it, but what's going to work for you? Now, that doesn't mean all of a sudden he'll be fine. Now, of course, I also said to him, I know you're triggered. I get the triggered part. If you were able, again, big if you were able, when that happens, when you're hearing it, rather than just saying, in effect, shut up, if he was able to say, ooh, that just got to me right now. Hang on a second. That got to me. Hang on a second. I know you want to talk about it. I don't think I've got it right now, but I get it. I do want to hear it. What should we do? Because they're meeting at the meta level. You know what I mean? They're not going to talk about the thing yet, but they're at least talking about how to talk about it, and they're still connected.
It's interesting. I was scrolling through Instagram yesterday, which I don't do very often these days. So I had like a gazillion stories. So I'm not sure if I'm remembering this totally correctly. But, Esther Perel had one of her little, pithy things about, when couples come into my office and they have a story, they should leave with a different story when you're coming for couples therapy. And it reminded me when you were first telling me about your training with narrative therapy is the stories that we tell ourselves, that we tell each other, and how to reframe things in different ways to understand. So it looks like in a situation like this, and what you were just saying, it's a matter of reframing, first of all, how you perceive things. So in this sense, Lily needs to reframe her relationship with her parents, how she presents that to her husband, and how he reacts to it. Well, she has
Well,
no control over his reaction,
of course.
but so the only thing she has control over is how she's going to interact with her parents and how she is going to present what happens in those conversations to her husband.
Well, again, I would go back to how she interacts with her husband is the central part of this. It's because what happens with her parents is I would say initially is an utterly different issue. I'm not saying it's irrelevant. I'm just saying that's not the thing to focus. And when you say reframe, and I'm going to reframe the word reframe a little bit, because reframe sounds like, oh, all you have to do is kind of
No,
rejigger
it's
your
not that
concepts.
simple.
It's a matter, again, I invoke faith here, it's a matter of taking sort of on faith the concept that no matter what story you've got going, and I so often point out to everybody, look, I don't know these folks, but the one thing I'm almost certain of is neither one of them is batshit crazy. They're not. They're not crazy. Neither one of them is crazy. So if we take that as a given, then whatever their reactions are have a basis in something that isn't crazy. Do you know what I mean? So it's a matter of this idea of being able to reframe. It's a matter of recognizing whatever story you have, whatever understanding you have that is sort of saying, oh, there you go again. There are always things that don't quite fit it. It's not a perfect representation. Everybody acts, quote unquote, out of character occasionally. And those moments are interesting moments. So I'll bet there have been times when Lily has said things to her husband or whatever, where he has risen to the occasion in a different way, and it'd be interesting for her to consider, gee, I wonder what made that possible, without classifying him as being inherently evil or arrogant or whatever it is. And he may be arrogant. God knows I know that one. As an arrogant man myself. That, you know what I mean? There, yes, that's there, but also there's some other things too. Different conversation I had yesterday, since I seem to be all focusing on conversations I had yesterday, this is yet a different one, where somebody was feeling hurt that her husband, when she would go on a business trip, her husband would just insist on touching base with her. She'd never cheated on him. She'd never given him any reason to doubt her fidelity, but he always wanted to sort of touch base at least once at the end of the day. When she got back to her hotel room, she went and she was in a business that has her out socializing as part of her work in the evening. And so whenever she got back, he wanted to make sure that she would text or call or something. And she was feeling like this just felt like a
Like he's checking
like
up
he's
on me,
checking up
right? He
on her, right?
doesn't trust
Exactly.
me.
Right,
As
exactly.
opposed to he really loves me and cares for me and wants to make sure that I got home
Bingo.
safely.
And now I wasn't about trying to talk her out of the feeling like he's checking up on her and he doesn't trust her. She know that she's aware of that. He I don't know him. I may come to meet him. That's the plan is that he's going to be joining us, but he wasn't able to yesterday. But the idea is both things can be true. If the dominant feeling is just that, oh, there you go again, not trusting me, you lose sight of the fact that, isn't that interesting? You know, if a couple is doing well and the same circumstances apply, if a couple is doing well where it isn't about insecurity or mistrust, it's sort of like, you know, she might well feel like, well, I don't need to talk to him every day. And he might feel like, yeah, but I really want to. And she might feel like, well, I get that. I mean, it's not, you know, it's more you than me, but I'll do that for you. Or he might feel like, well, I know she doesn't always want to do that, so I don't have to do it. You know what I'm saying? It just isn't a problem. They accommodate, even though it might be a little annoying. You know, it gets back to that. But that's when they're doing well. And the doing well is about, exactly as you're describing, shift, letting that narrative be richer. That's I prefer that to reframing. Do you know what I mean? Reframing sounds like you're tinkering with the the mechanism, you know?
I like that, letting our narrative be richer.
Yeah, letting it be richer. And I like the notion of richer because it's like, oh, it's, you know, and what one of the big gurus, he hated being called a guru, may he rest in peace, Michael White, who was the big guy in
narrative.
I had an argument with him once at a training about, you know, in effect saying he's the guru and he was just absolutely not having it. And I was saying, what are we all doing here paying money to see you if we don't think of you as like the guy, you know? Anyway, it was, we got along. Anyway, I didn't know him that well. But he would point out that notion of a thin narrative versus a thick narrative. Do you know what I mean? And the thin story is where everything is reduced down to these types. And a lot of times, when one of the things you think about in narrative therapy terms is when people come to see you, they're being oppressed by a thin story. It's this sense of, well, that's all that's going on here. It probably isn't. So I want to get back to Lily's really, really important, good question. You know, where does it go from annoyance to destructive, poisonous levels? And I don't think that's inherent in the situation per se. It's inherent in much more than just a given situation, you know, a given annoyance. Like, you could look at a situation like she's describing and saying, okay, that's a sticky point between them, but if everything else is generally fine, you could probably figure out some way of, you know, talk about it, you'll figure something out, or go see a therapist, and you'll figure something out, whatever. The implication of this letter is everything else isn't generally fine. The implication of this letter is she's feeling blamed for being who she is. I'm going beyond what she said, so Lily, you know, apologies if I'm going beyond what you said, but that's what it sounds like, and I've heard lots of people speak this way, especially women, I want to say, but there's perhaps a gendered piece to this, but whatever. Lots of people will feel they're just being accused, in a sense, of being at fault for difficulties not of their own making. And it, you know, it this kind of, the way she's describing it, this kind of thing, and I see this a lot. It's like, yeah, he's saying that everything is my fault. I'm the one who's broken. I need to go to therapy. And that rarely gets a couple anyways. Let's put it that way. Of course, I have a bias of being a couple's therapist.
Maybe send her parents because all of their problems are her parents' fault.
Yeah, exactly.
Need a couple's
therapist. All of her problems are not her parents' fault because part of her problems are her husband's fault. And I'm not trying to blame her husband's either. They're her fault, they're her husband's fault. There's God's fault. You know, it isn't about fault. I mean, we all mess up. It isn't, you know, the focus on who's to blame is probably not going to get you any place. And I would say that to him, at least as much as to her. The focus on, gee, what happens to us when this happens? You see, even to formulate that question in the moment implies that you're not in a panic. It's like, yeah, I hear you saying it's all my fault. It's all my parents' fault. And I get why you would think, you know, if only I wouldn't get upset about it, then I wouldn't have to, you know, turn to you for comfort. There's still something about it that's between us. You know, now I'm imagining this very calm person who's just felt really hurt and insulted, staying very calm and being able to leap to that level and say, yeah, we don't seem to be able to talk about this. Let's talk about how we talk about it. You know, can you find me there? You know, and again, I'm imagining inviting the husband to that same place. It's like, yeah, this is that place where you feel like, oh, geez, whatever I do is wrong. And I just wanted to go get fixed. But it's a pain point between the two of you. You know, you both end up in big fights about it. You're both involved in that. I wonder what would happen if you were able to say, geez, what do we do about this? You know, now sometimes what a couple will get to, if they can relax enough to face that moment, That's when, says the couple's therapist, they might say, you know, maybe we should try therapy on this.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't sound like they can relax to that level.
Well, maybe. And you know, it's funny I say maybe because I am a great fan, and this comes up in therapy sessions. I will often say, you know, I wonder, and in wondering this, I hope it partly makes it true, I wonder if this conversation will help you when it arises again, because it will. When it arises again, I wonder if this conversation will help you have just that much more perspective so that you can head off your panic response at the pass, you know? So I'll say, you don't go fully to panic. It's like, oh, geez, I recognize this. It's really unpleasant. It's uncomfortable. It's annoying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Painful. I don't mean to trivialize
it. Mm-hmm.
And then you can take a different approach, which is simply an approach that it'll be different simply because you're not freaking out. It won't be World War III if you're not freaking out.
That's true. World War III
happens when you're freaking out. I mean, kind of, that's what I equate those things. You know, that's what she means by that.
Well, I can relate. You know, many was the time I'd get off the phone with my mother and, you know.
Well, yeah, go say more about that if you would. I think it'll be interesting to our listeners, perhaps.
Well, you know, now I don't often bring up past relationships.
Yeah.
But let's just say you have a very different way of reacting than my first husband did. And maybe because you're a couples therapist.
Mm-mm. No. I can hope. That's easy. Nope. That's not. It's the other way around. It's that I had to learn a lot in order to want to be a couples therapist.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So he would get more caught up in the drama. And whereas you're not that the dramatic type. So you're able to help me see things in a different perspective.
Yeah.
And help me enrich.
Enrich your narrative, yeah,
enrich my narrative.
Yeah, and you know, what is, of course, what is central in that is my not freaking out, which is central to my being a therapist, by the way.
Right.
Which is, I can't always pull off 100% of the time either.
Mm-hmm.
I've, you know, and I always learn from those situations. If I get close to a freak out mode in a session.
Yeah.
Oh my God, early in COVID, there's one particular session I had where it's like I was not quite losing my shit, but almost, you know.
Yeah.
I'm utterly useless to the folks at that point.
Sure.
It ended up being really good. The couple didn't recognize it at the time, and I talked about it in the next session.
Uh-huh.
And they were, you know, the guy who was the one who was sort of triggering me was taking on the blame himself, and I was having none of it. You know, he was saying, no, I have that effect on a lot of people, which is probably true, but I would say, no, but wait a minute. But this was on me. But it ended up, as so often is the case when there's a glitch like that, when you work through it, it ends up being enriching. That is true for a couple as well. When the couple has the glitch and you work through it, it's not merely that you've worked through that particular thing. You've actually made the whole relationship richer.
Mm-hmm.
You benefit from that if you can pull it off without losing your shit. You know,
yeah.
It's really all about that.
So getting back to Lily, what are healthy levels of annoyance, what are destructive, poisonous levels, and how can we get this from a poisonous, destructive level, because that's where it sounds like it is, to a healthy level where they're not both freaking out like that.
Well, I'll tell you how I think my first thought on how to answer that is to really go back to the same question I have in my chapter, just to put in a shameless plug for the book, for the Reigniting the Spark, how to know when to call it quits.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at that issue, you know, like what's an annoyance and what's destructive, poisonous levels, that's equivalent, I would say, to asking the question, okay, what's a deal breaker and what's a growing pain?
Mm-hmm.
So annoyances, and I know it sounds trivializing to call them annoyances. Annoyances, even when they're big, if they are something you feel like, okay, we can work with this, that's a growing pain. If it's a deal breaker, it's not. Now, what constitutes a deal breaker? There's the class of deal breakers that have nothing to do with morality. They just have to do with compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the class of deal breakers that says, I'm sorry, but turns out I'm gay and you're the opposite sex and it ain't gonna work. You know, there's that. There's the class of deal breakers that says, oh my God, I know you just absolutely have to live close to your parents, but I have to live close to my parents and they live on opposite coasts.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't bring myself to be with you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bummer. All right. Those are the logical deal breakers. There are deal breakers that are really judgment calls. Even something like violence, which of course is not to call it an annoyance is a horrible, you know, trivialization. Even things like that are judgment calls in the sense that if somebody perceives, as they so often do, okay, there have been these episodes of violence, but I think in the grand context of things, I'll bet we can get past that, you know? That's often a, frankly, bad decision, right? It often, people delude themselves with that all the time. I get that, but it's a judgment call.
Yeah.
They are making that judgment call. Another one of my go-to stories about a woman who was taking care of someone who had been a foster child of hers many, many years before. So the former foster child was now in his 40s, and she was allowing him to live with her, and he was sexually abusing her. And she had her marbles, and the adult protective services worker that I consulted, because I had to, and she knew I had to. She was fine with my calling that, because she was elderly. And the APS worker said, does she have her marbles? And she clearly did. There was nothing, you know, she was not deluded. She knew what was going on. She just thought she could somehow save him by letting this happen. And I thought that was profoundly stupid, but she had a right to be stupid. It was a judgment call. Bad in my opinion, but I can't live other people's lives with them, nor could the APS worker. I thought that was interesting. You know, the state couldn't intervene if she wouldn't do anything about it. So those are, you know, those sorts of situations are still judgment calls. Somewhere along the way, and this is hard because it's hard. So, for a person in Lily's situation, somewhere along the way, somebody has to make a judgment that says, okay, do I think this is going to work? Do I think we can work on this so that I don't have to go through this painful stuff? Or do I not? And everybody, I'm glad we live in a culture where people have the ability to divorce if they feel the need to do so. So, you know, and you know, my bias is toward helping people stay together.
Right.
You know, I want to work with folks like Lily and her husband to help them not have that be a deal breaker if possible.
Yeah. Well, do you think it would be helpful to Lily if she did go to therapy on her own?
Possibly. I will. You know, it's, I'm sorry, did you want to say more?
Well, no, that was pretty much it. The second part, was it going to be destructive for the relationship?
Exactly, yeah. That's the part I was going to put. Yeah, you've heard me say that before. It's not my idea either.
Yeah.
Look, I am not at all, I've done individual therapy with folks for years. You know, I'm not opposed to individual therapy.
Right.
There is a fascinating phenomenon that happens, and there's some statistical evidence of this, that if you're in a situation where you're having difficulty with your spouse and you go to individual therapy, and you know, it's funny, I don't know if the research supports this. My impression is, especially if the spouse won't go.
Right, which it sounds like he doesn't want to go.
So far.
He's saying it's your problem,
yeah,
not mine.
So far.
Right.
Again, but assuming that's, if that's what's going on, individual therapy often has the effect of inviting the person to question their relationship in ways that wouldn't happen the same way in couples therapy. Because the therapist is, and it's funny, I worked this way even when I was doing individual therapy, which is why I'm really much better as a couples therapist. I feel a responsibility to everybody involved in somebody's life, including the person I'm working with. Lots of individual therapists will say, no, my only responsibility is to this particular person, and other people, they have their own therapists. You know, I don't think that way. We're all connected. I feel a responsibility to people's spouses that I don't know, to people's children that I don't know, and parents I don't know, and to the world in general that we're all part of. I think when I'm working with a person, when I'm working with a couple, part of that work is tikkun olam, to misuse that term. Repairing the world, for those of you who know that. It's used in a very trendy way, but that's not what it originally meant. Doesn't matter. So, you know, what would I say in a situation like this? Indeed, she could well benefit from going to therapy. It might have the effect of threatening the marriage, because she might conclude in individual therapy, there's no talking to him about this. I always feel...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I always feel that's a shame, because, yeah, I hear the situation now. Maybe that's what you were about to point out. It sure seems like there's no talking to him about it.
Well, only because he says that he should not be involved whatsoever in any therapy or with them. Now, that's an unrealistic thing to say, you know, you're not going to be involved with your wife's parents
I know plenty of folks who try to do that.
And how does it work out?
Well, what I'm hearing about it, it's not working out.
It's not working out too well.
But that's because that's what I'm hearing about.
Well, yes,
Yeah, he's implying he would like her to cut them off as well.
Right. And that's not going to happen.
Probably not. I mean, I've worked with so many folks I've worked with folks who have done that.
Mm-hmm.
It's often like amputating a limb.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that analogy because sometimes you do have to amputate a limb so that it doesn't kill you.
Right.
But it's like amputating a limb. It's like, yeah, but now you've lost the limb and you still have phantom pain. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Those analogies hold up.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well.
You might cut them out, but the problems aren't going to go away.
Right.
Because whatever is there is going to fester. You're going to resent your spouse because he made her do it.
Right.
Which, if she chooses to do that, she has a say in it too.
Right.
But there's always that resentment.
Yeah, exactly. And so it ends up usually not working to do that. But again, this, you know, when I hear this situation, which is not uncommon at all,
mm-hmm.
I did a whole video. Hey, another shameless plug. I have a video on how to get your reluctant guy to try couples therapy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Check it out on my YouTube channel, Bruce Schomer. You'll see that. I hear this a lot, and often gendered this way. You know,
yeah.
Men don't want to go to therapy. It's all women's problems, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So just because he's saying that now, I've seen so many instances of men who have then changed their minds and said, okay, I will do that, who have then been full participants and it's benefited them both.
Mm-hmm.
Or they've been full participants and they've ended up splitting up anyway. But,
right.
You know, that's a different issue. But the fact that he's taking that stand now, anybody taking any stand, that's one of the other things I've learned about, maybe just because I'm an old guy, you know. You probably know this. And you know lots of people who have taken a stand and they, lo and behold, have changed their minds.
Mm-hmm.
We all do that.
Right.
To varying degrees at various times.
Right.
So I wouldn't take that as the final word on the subject from him. It's a way of his, if I were speaking with him, I would be asking him about why, you know, how frustrating it is when he's hearing her bring that up. I can probably imagine, you know, and again, I would want to hear it from him.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. She's probably not surprised he's frustrated by it.
Sure.
It's not like that's a...
No, she's got to be totally aware of the effects that it has on her and him and their marriage.
And I'm not surprised that she's so frustrated that he just sort of tunes out, you know, because that's not what she wants from her husband right now.
Right.
She's feeling
like,
hurt.
I'm done with dealing with this.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, I hope I would never turn you away from comfort,
mm-hmm.
even if you're talking about something that... Well, almost inevitably, unless your complaint is about me, and I hope I wouldn't turn you away about that. If your complaint is about something else, I have no control over it. If your complaint, in the tricky situations, and I have not experienced this with you, but the tricky situations are where if he's feeling like, well, clearly he is feeling this way. It's not merely that he can't control her parents. It's that he's feeling like she's not doing what she could do, so he's
right.
tired. He's had it.
Right.
It's like, you know, the adult kid who keeps asking for more and more money, and they keep blowing it and making bad choices.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you say, my help is not helping you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to help you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sorry to be a hard ass, but tough.
Right.
You know? I don't ever want to say that to you or have you say that to me. That doesn't work well in a marriage. You know, it's like, even if I think you're making judgments that I would question, I would never want to turn you away from comfort from me. That's my job.
Right.
I can't, and I'm not going to second guess your judgments because I'm not you. And, but of course, that's central.
Right.
That's the other thing, which he isn't quite at that level. Let's just put it. That's a bit of a snobbish comment on my part to say, but whatever. So getting back to her, just to her question as stated, what are acceptable levels, healthy levels, what are destructive, poisonous levels? I don't think it's about the specific situation. It's not like measuring the level.
Yeah.
It's like, to what extent do you feel you could do something about it? That's where the issue. When you get to the point of saying, I don't perceive there's a way out of this that involves staying together.
Yeah.
And implicit is, I think, even though it'll be incredibly painful to split up, I think it'll be better if we do. And again, that doesn't have to be a we, that could be an I, you know? I think it'll be better if I do, and I'm sorry for the pain that's causing, that's not the intent, but it'll cause pain, but I, you know, that's what I perceive. That's a really tough call, but that's the call you have to make. I'm not saying she has to decide to split up, I'm saying, or she could say, this is really bad,
mm-hmm.
It's not just a minor annoyance,
right?
You know, but I'll bet if we try a different angle on this, which again, my go-to on that is couples therapy, you know, I'll bet if we tried that, it'll be a different thing. And I would invite her to check out my video on how to get a reluctant guy to go to couples therapy.
For sure.
At the risk of, you know, she may well experience that as sort of too flippant. You know, it is a pretty flippant video.
That's worth a shot, though.
It's worth a shot. I mean, and look, spoiler alert, you know, I'll say what it is that is the point. The reason guys say they won't go to therapy, it's not, they often say stuff like what her husband is saying,
mm-hmm.
often. It's like, well, this is your problem. You're the one who's unhappy.
Right.
You're the, you know, you're the one I'm having trouble with. It's all you. It's all your parents. You go take care of that and don't tell me, you know, tell me about it or not. But what's underneath that is terror, raw terror. Because think about that. If you said to me, you know, I'm having this issue dealing with some, God knows, a computer thing. There's a great example, right? that's a realistic one.
That is.
Yeah, maybe some problem with the computer thing, and you know, and it's one that I don't know what the hell to do with either. You know what I mean? I still want to comfort you on that. And you might say, well, look, I know you've tried stuff. Would you just sit with me while I do this,
mm-hmm.
in hopes that we'll learn something? Why would I say no to that? You know, I mean, it's like, I'm not afraid of it.
Right.
I may not have much faith in it, but I want to help you. You know, I want to be nice to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I want to support you. And yeah, if you think we should try that, sure, we'll try that. I wouldn't do that if I thought what you were bringing me into scared the living hell out of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's often, guys won't admit it.
Yeah.
But I think that's how we feel.
Oh, he might not even subconsciously be able or consciously be able to admit to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be condescending to him either. Do you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? I can relate to that. Guys, we don't want to ask directions. You
right.
know, that's a funny, yes. It's like I said, we were sitting at the computer the other day looking at a new thing. And Judy was saying, you know, we could watch the instruction video. And I turned to her and I said, do I look like a girl? Realizing how stupid that was for me to say. but that's the, there's a, as you know.
That made me laugh.
There is that tendency,
yes.
among guys. And it's related. It's, you know, the ask for directions thing. It's like,
yes.
Oh, damn it, I'm, you know, I'm strong and I can fend for myself here and I can protect the family. You know, there's that. And so, right, it often is about...
As I often have to say to you, no, we're turning right there, not left.
And you know perfectly well that you are 99.4% of time correct on that. Doesn't mean I don't resist. Or whatever, you know. No, those are, and look, we are laughing about that.
Yes.
And that's exactly the point. Do you see what I mean? We're laughing about something like that because we get along, you know.
Yeah.
And so those things are funny, but they're real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can be annoying,
mm-hmm.
but they're just funny.
Yeah.
They're just hilarious. But this isn't funny.
No.
And a lot of the time, that's why I say, when you get into couples therapy, a lot of what I do in a first session, and this, I want to be clear, this is not my central intent, but it has this effect. It often surprises people. My very first question I ever ask, and you know, rather than spoil that, I'll say, read my book. It's not about communication, because
uh-huh.
One of the chapters in that is basically a look under the hood.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically, I tell you all the questions I tend to ask in a first session. And you can see from my very first question, many, many, many people say, that's a good question. And I think what they mean by that is, that's a surprising question.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I wasn't expecting you to ask that.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to ask, what's the matter? You know,
yeah,
or
yeah.
What are you here for? You know,
right.
I asked a different question and it immediately says, oh, we're in a different place here.
Yeah.
And that, so it's surprising to people. And often people worry, totally understandably worry, especially a guy in his situation, worry that, yeah, they're going to come to therapy and I'm going to side with his wife and
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, well, stop being an asshole.
Right.
And that is not what happens.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is I side with both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I also say, don't be an asshole. But that's, but I say, but you know, look, I say that to her too. You know,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, well, none of us should be assholes. We're all capable of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, don't do that.
Right.
So... Anyway, I hope that is helpful, Lily. That, you know,
there's a lot to digest there, Lily.
Yeah, and again, I want to express appreciation for the question, because it's a really thoughtful and you know, important question. And again, I do want to, you know, my being flippant about things like calling things minor annoyances or, you know, mildly annoyed or moderately annoyed. I recognize there's an edge. I'm walking a fine line. Because I don't want to trivialize people's pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to, you know, say, oh, what's the matter with you that you would feel that? Oh, my
right.
God, I can see that. I also, though, do want to offer another spin that is often useful. It's kind of an example of what we were talking about. It's like, you know, there are other ways to thinking about this. Not that the way you've been thinking about it is wrong, but there are others that make it interesting. You know, multiple realities can be true at the same time.
Very true.
Yeah.
Well, if you... like Lily, have a question that you would like us to talk about on the air, you can go to CTN7, our website, ctn7.com, and you can write to us there.
Indeed.
And if you would like to be a guest on our show or have suggestions for a guest on our show, you can go to ctn7.com, and there's a place where you can sign up for that.
The very place. So let us conclude by putting in a few reiterative, is that
mm-hmm.
a word? Reiterative words for our the various things that you can acquire by going to the aforementioned website, CTN7.com.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you can sign up for my newsletter, which is what Lily did.
Right.
And you'll see I often discuss some of the same stuff we talk about in podcasts, but often not. Often it's different stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you will get, if you do that, a free copy of my booklet, which Judy will hold up momentarily.
Oh, wrong one.
Wrong one. That one. That's the one.
Here we are. 7 words to jumpstart your love life.
Absolutely. And so it's a nice book. It really summarizes a lot of the stuff that it's in my other books at greater length.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't, you know, a lot of topics not covered, but it's a nice sort of summary of a lot of the ideas that I've been spouting for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you can get
our merch.
Our merch at our website, our mugs, our tote bags, our t-shirts, all with the inspiring message, the 7 words of the title of our podcast, be kind, don't panic, and have faith.
Mm-hmm.
And now let's put in one more word for our sponsor.
The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
Yes, indeed. A beautifully written very spicy erotica, very explicit erotica. If that's what you're into, you will like that book. If you're into that, and I said it earlier, if you're into that and Bible and sex, and there's
yeah.
a lot of sex already in the Bible.
And, you know, I've been watching a lot of Batsheva's video, Batsheva Marcus, whom we interviewed a couple of times. She's a sex therapist, and, you know, she has her 30-day challenges and, you know, all these
mm-hmm.
different things going on. So one of the things she is recommending to couples is to read erotica together, to read erotic fiction, to spice up things in the bedroom,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, sometimes they need a little spicing up.
Absolutely. And so we'll have to include a shout out to Batsheva. We'll mention that we mentioned her in this
mm-hmm.
in this episode. And indeed, if you like erotica, go for that book. Available at lariazilber.com, LariaZylber, lariazilber.com. There is a link to that in the notes for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
There's a link to that from our website,
right.
ctn7.com.
Or you can also go to Amazon.
Go right to Amazon, search for Laria Zilber. If you search for The Blue Tent, be sure to include Erotic Tales from the Bible. There's a number of books that have the title The Blue Tent in
right.
one form or another.
Mm-hmm.
But and it's funny, when you were looking for images, you know,
uh-huh.
to use with it, and when you were I was creating the website
right.
for Laria, actually, and
it had pictures of blue tents.
It had pictures of blue tents that you could
like
buy.
Like camping tents.
Camping tents. That's not what
not
it's
the
about.
Image I was going for.
Not the one. Anyway. And so until next time.
Remember, be kind.
Don't panic.
And have faith.